I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. President-elect Obama names his national security team, and a new list says New Orleans has the worst crime rate in the country. So what are officials going to do about it, and what do locals need to help them feel like it's worth staying in the Big Easy? We've got these stories and more on today's Bloggers Roundtable with Anthony Bradley, creator of the Institute blog, Nashika Washington, who blogs at yourblackfriend.com, and Eric Brown, who blogs for the Detroit News. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi there.
So today it became official. People have been predicting for weeks that Barack Obama would pick Hillary Clinton for Secretary of State. Anthony, they fought down to the bone for the Democratic nomination, but now they're all smiles. Do you think they like each other or that they've got each other's backs even?
Well, whether they like each other or not, they're certainly going to figure out a way to work together. I think that what we're seeing with Obama's choices is that he is building a centrist cabinet. These are fundamental individuals that have expertise in various areas. And the brilliant thing about the Clinton choice is it keeps her out of all the congressional bickering that's about to happen as the Democrats fight for territory. And it also keeps her out of the Demexit conversation. To keep her on a plane somewhere in Saudi Arabia actually gives him more of the platform. So this is actually brilliant and strategic, I think.
Nashika, when you think about the Senator Clinton move, I had a couple different conversations. One was, is it better to be a senator or the Secretary of State? So what do you think about the choice that she had to make? Not that she's confirmed yet, but also now there's going to be this huge release of information from donors to President Clinton, Bill Clinton, that goes into the vetting of Senator Hillary Clinton. Do you think that we'll see any surprises there?
As far as the vetting process goes, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting because there's a lot of dirt, presumably, that's going to be uncovered. But I think it was a brilliant choice. And just to get to your other question, I do think he likes her. I think he respects her. And obviously appointing her to this position, it's powerful. Do I want to be a senator or do I want to be on a worldwide stage? Hillary is going to love being in this position. And I think she'll be good at it.
Eric, when you think about the attacks in Mumbai, that to me really crystallizes some of the challenges that this president is going to have. There are the questions of, for example, who's your ally? Just because you have supported someone in the past, if they are also harboring terrorists, how do you take action against them? What kinds of issues do you think this team is going to have to deal with as they step in and they're ready on day one, a phrase that got overused during the campaign?
Well, it's going to be interesting for one, because a lot of people like Barack Obama. A lot of people, so they say, likes Hillary Clinton, based on her former first lady status. And I think there will be definitely some pressures, but I think they will be able to coalesce a lot of the pressures that people perceive to be out there. And I think it's going to be a very successful 4 years, possibly 8 years for President-elect Barack Obama.
Now, I want to turn to New Orleans. You know, it's got, according to the CQ Press City Crime Rankings list, the highest crime rate in the nation. That's based on 19,000 reported crimes, which includes 209 murder cases in 2007. Anthony, let me start with you. New Orleans obviously still grappling with Hurricane Katrina. Many of the city's best and brightest have left. There are so many wonderful people left, don't get me wrong, but I'm thinking of actually two people who I knew in college, who, because of a home invasion attack, the wife was shot and killed and the husband wounded, and he ran a free medical clinic. And so after that happened, they left, you know, the surviving husband and the child left. When you are talking about that kind of violence that can occur against anyone, what does the federal government, for example, owe to this city, which was so much of its misery tied up with the federal response or lack thereof?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the federal government has some responsibility to help restore order. There is a massive lack of the rule of law that's created a context for violence and New Orleans' reputation for corruption. And until government establishes the kind of context where you can have investment by business and also civil society, where intermediate institutions like churches and community groups can work together, it's going to be unattractive for those people who seek to go to New Orleans to have a better life.
Eric, if you had to put on your time-lapse imagination, what would you see happening to New Orleans over the next 5-10 years?
Well, to piggyback on what Anthony said, the American government has a great responsibility to restore order in New Orleans, because it would not be the way it is right now. Though they had their problems prior to Hurricane Katrina, but a lot of the problems now, I feel, is a direct result of Katrina. And with that being said, looking 5 years to the future, there will have to be some type of situation or an initiative put forth by the government to change things around. That is a tourist city. If you want people to continue to come down there and visit the city, make it respectable, clean up the crime, and I'm not saying do whatever it takes to do that, but you're going to have to do something to put some things in place to make people even want to feel safe going there and living there again.
Nishika, there were times when, for example, you know, times in the past half century where tourists avoided New York City because they thought it was too dangerous. New Orleans has, the people who go to New Orleans often walk away with the sense of magic and mystery, or at least they did, you know, when they came to a city that really combined several different layers of history, the Spanish history, the French history, the Creole history, the American history, blues, jazz, on and on and on. But crime is really critical in terms of how people choose where to live and also where to visit.
Absolutely.
Do you think that with this kind of a crime problem, New Orleans can recover?
I'm not sure that New Orleans will recover to be the same kind of place that it was before, basically. And I'm not sure that the government has any vested interest in seeing that happen. You're talking about tourist dollars. That's a state issue. It's a local issue. And really, I don't think we should kid ourselves that New Orleans has always been on this list in the top five. I think if you look back historically, I can't guarantee it's top five, but I'm pretty sure as a city.
It certainly has been, you know, a decade ago it was at the very top.
Yeah, and now it's exacerbated as a result of Hurricane Katrina, but I don't know that you can say, oh, you know, the government has to come in now and restore order because they messed up in the first place.
But do you think that there are any ways, just to broaden it out a little bit, that when you have cities, whether it's Detroit or Baltimore, New Orleans, you have cities that are known for higher crime rates, but also have cultural value, of course, mm-hmm. that there are ways to be smart about how you can do policing or how you
Absolutely.
Can address those issues?
Absolutely. But again, those are more local issues. I mean, you talked about the corruption of the government there. I guess their superstar governor, Jindal, maybe he can have some kind of, I don't know, say about how things change. But hopefully it will be restored. New Orleans is a great place, but I'm not interested in visiting at this time because of the crime.
All right. Well, on that note, we are NPR's News and Notes. This is our Bloggers Roundtable, and you were just hearing the voice of Nishika Washington, who blogs at yourblackfriend.com. We've also got Anthony Bradley, creator of the Institute blog, and Eric Brown of the Detroit News. Eric, let me go to you. This has caused a lot of laughter, but it's a very serious issue. If you are the kind of person who is large enough to fit on two airline seats, should you be charged for one or two? The airlines, understandably wanting their money, are like, well, you got to pay for two. But the Canadian Supreme Court just ruled that people have a functional disability, that their obesity is a functional disability, and that's a legal term. And it's like one person, one fare. What do you think of that ruling? Eric?
The problem is, I agree with what the Canadian courts did, because when you're on an airplane, it's about comfort. And if I'm on a plane where I'm sitting, nothing against an obese person, but I want to be comfortable as well. And that person deserves to be just as comfortable. So if they could get to be able to sit in a seat or buy a seat for one person and they can occupy both seats, I think that's only fair. Because sometimes if you say, for instance, you're flying from New York to L.A. nonstop, that's a long flight. I've flown from Detroit to California, you know, 4.5-hour flight. I would hate to have been sitting next to an obese person, because, you know, there are times where you may have to go to the bathroom. You got to ask that person to move. There are times we just want to, you know, be comfortable yourself. So I applaud the Canadian court for doing what they're doing. It's only fair, because it's fair to that person. They should not have to suffer based on, you know, if you want to look at a disability, some people will look at it as a disability. Some people will look at the person as being a circumstance of their own self. But still, it's only fair. Let them have two seats for the price of one.
Anthony, what about, I'll play the role of an airline executive. How do you expect us in these tough times to make any money when you got one person taking two seats but paying for one? How's that going to work?
Well, I would actually support you as an airline executive. The Center for Disease Control just did a study that came out recently. And just in America, with our 10% average increase in our weight, it's costing the airline industry an extra $275 million just for an average of 10% weight increase in Americans, because they have to use 350 million more gallons of fuel. And 3.8 million extra tons of carbon dioxide are released just to move larger people around the country. And the real issue is the economic one. We're talking about the spillover cost. The key question is, why do healthy people have to subsidize that extra $275 million a year that airlines have to spend in terms of revenue they don't receive from that empty seat? And that's really the core question.
Nishika, do you think needs to be done?
Well, just the whole issue, I think it's going to be interesting for them to figure out what determines whether or not you're obese. How much extra weight do you have to have? Is it your body mass index? Is it a hormonal issue? I mean, how are they going to be able to make that determination? I think it's going to be interesting to see how this gets worked out. It's one thing to say, yes, we have a policy, but it's another thing to see it put into effect.
That's interesting. Yeah, because there are clinical definitions of obesity, but it sounds like you're talking about what will the practical application of that be when it comes to applying this law.
Right, and then, of course, you've also
be a whole lot of measurements and stuff before people get on planes.
Farrar, let me interject for a second right quick, because if they're talking about BMI, that is so widespread, then the average person would be overweight.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, it's a huge issue, so to speak. All right, moving right along. Eric, you're going to be a panelist tomorrow for a forum for potential candidates to fill the remainder of Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick's term. Now, he pleaded guilty to two counts of obstructing justice by perjuring himself when he denied under oath an affair with his ex-chief of staff. Today, his ex-chief of staff, Christine Beattie, pleaded guilty to two felony obstruction of justice counts. Now, she's going to serve 4 months in jail, 5 years on probation. Eric, what is the expectation of what's going to unfold from both the replacement of Kilpatrick and the kind of Kilpatrick hangover?
Well, my expectation, and I hope it's the same expectation of the residents of Detroit, should center around character and integrity. Quit letting names be the precipice for you going to the ballot box to vote for someone, and just go to the ballot box in general. I mean, it's a shame that you had an election on November 4th and only 53% of the eligible voters in Detroit voted. If you feel that strong about your city, if you want your city to not be the laughingstock of the country, then go out and make a change, go out and make a difference by going to vote. So the key expectation for filling out the remainder of the term or the next election of the mayor come November of 2009 should be character and integrity. That's what the people should be looking for, because they went with the glamour candidate in 05 and, you know, in 01, and look at where they got them.
That whole issue of voting when it's not sexy, you know, a lot of people have been talking about whether or not the people really this time around voted in large numbers because they liked Obama or because they were committed to the process. Do you think people are, in fact, Nishika, going to turn out and have their say?
In Detroit?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they will. I mean, I don't know if they're concerned about being a laughingstock, but I'd like to think that they would, but as evidenced by their last election and our general tendency, maybe. Who knows?
And then I guess, you know, Anthony, when I think about this, it's something where Kwame Kilpatrick called himself the hip hop mayor. Is this going to prevent future mayors from taking on monikers like that and, you know, mantles like that?
Absolutely. I actually hope so, because what Detroit needs is not necessarily a hip-hop mayor. They need a mayor who has the character and integrity, like Eric said, to get things done. Detroit is on the brink of a crisis if the auto industry goes down, and so they need a mayor who actually is probably not as glamorous, but someone who has the intelligence and the wherewithal to make really tough decisions and clean house so that the citizens of Detroit can rebuild that city.
All right. Correct. Guys, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were speaking to Anthony Bradley, creator of the Institute blog. He joined us from KWMU in St. Louis, Missouri. Eric Brown, who blogs for the Detroit News, joined us from WYCD in Detroit, Michigan. And Ashika Washington, who blogs at yourblackfriend.com, was here in our studios at NPR West.
Since I said to you that we were through, just like a fool, I went away from home.
That's our show for today. Thank you for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org.